Welcome to this episode of On The Case, the LSE Law Society's podcast. In each episode, we speak to various professionals and experts to gain insight into legal careers, law school, and other exciting developments in the world of law. Without further ado, sit back and enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of LSE On The Case. My name is Sophia Dallimore, and today I am thrilled to be joined by Megan Yeats, an antitrust and foreign investment associate at the renowned world-class law firm Freshfields. Interestingly, Megan is dual qualified in the US and the UK and dials in from the Freshfields office in San Francisco. Megan, it is a pleasure to have you on today.
Thanks so much for having me, Sophia. It's great to chat.
For our listeners, could you please describe your personal background, your education, as well as why you decided to move to the United States to continue your legal career?
Yeah, of course. So I have been at Freshfields since 2017 now. So I studied a law degree in London. I did law with Hispanic law and joined Freshfields as a trainee. I sort of do the majority of your seats in London. I did my last seat in New York, and I have now been an associate in the antitrust and competition team at Freshfields for about 4 years. So I sort of worked in London for three of those and did a secondment in Silicon Valley and moved out here last November. So it's been a year since I'm out here and a fully practicing US lawyer.
That's so exciting. And why did you choose to begin your career with Freshfields? And have these reasons changed or been evidenced in practice since working there?
So being at uni in London, I think you always have quite good exposure to the different law firms, especially, you know, these law society events. I remember being very involved when I was at university. So Freshfields always kind of immediately appealed just because of the international nature of Freshfields as a law firm. And I think a lot of law firms in London like say that they are international. And Freshfields has really proven to me over the last couple of years that it works in a completely global way. And some of that is evidenced by the fact that I was able to sort of move to the US. Freshfields' success in the US recently has sort of stood out and has made it, in my opinion, like one of the genuinely global firms. So it's kind of great to see that kind of carried on. And the second reason, I think, was the people. So you apply to all these big law firms, it's a given that you can work on some of the most, you know, interesting sort of cutting edge legal mandates. I just thought everyone seemed pretty great. No one took themselves too seriously. And again, I think I have some great friends from work, and I have a lot of respect for the partners that I work with. You know, if you're spending a lot of time in the office, it's quite nice being surrounded by people that you enjoy being with.
And you've hinted at this with in terms of your response to Freshfields growing in the United States, but could you speak more generally to the firm's growth strategy that you've observed since working at since beginning your career at Freshfields?
Yeah, and I think all of that really centers around the idea of being the best global law firm. Mm-hmm. And it's something that Freshfields, I think, is particularly well positioned to do. We have like an incredible historic presence in Europe. We've had offices in Asia for many years, and the US has always been a very difficult legal market for British firms to enter. And there's a lot of big firms, a lot of very successful firms. And that's a huge part of Freshfields' current strategy and something that I obviously feel is what makes Freshfields kind of like very interesting and dynamic. We're really like taking on all of the legal markets and giving kind of the best legal advice around the world.
Thank you. And having progressed from a trainee solicitor to an associate over the duration of your career at Freshfields, can you speak to the changes in your role and responsibilities from one position to the next?
So I think as a trainee, your sort of responsibility and role changes depending on what seat you're in. Your sort of role can also depend on your supervisor and how they like to work. There's a big shift, and I'm sure everyone says this as a lawyer, from a trainee to an NQ, just the level of responsibility you have. And I think for me personally, coming to the US and coming from the headquarters of London, where there's just loads of lawyers, to being you know, one of a team of four looking to build a practice in Silicon Valley has really changed the role I have in sort of growing the business and meeting clients, which I think only happens at a bit of a later stage sometimes in London.
Thank you. So speaking on your training contract, you've completed seats in litigation, M&A, equity capital markets, international arbitration, restructuring, and insolvency. And I would like to discuss your experiences in some of these seats. So firstly, as Freshfields is particularly famous for its litigation and international arbitration expertise, can you tell us what type of work you completed in these fields during your training contract and why you think Freshfields is regarded as such?
So, I mean, Freshfields, yeah, has a great arbitration team, and including a big arbitration team in New York that works a lot on Latin American matters. I think so. When I was there, I spent most of my time working on one particular large arbitration, which, you know, I was in the seat for 3 months, and so you end up seeing like a very small part of the case. But I was dealing with sort of witness reports when I was there. I think Freshfields stands out again. It has great leadership and a kind of breadth of practice that pulls in just some really great associates and have managed to build a really successful team.
Thank you. And moving on to the M&A, equity and capital markets space, can you give our listeners an overview of what work a trainee solicitor is typically tasked with on this seat?
Yes, it's very different to being, for example, in a litigation seat where you may be doing sort of a small part of some huge case that will run for years. So you're involved in quite a range of tasks, and they're normally tight deadlines. You can end up seeing, you know, multiple deals within one seat. So I sat in corporate for 6 months when I was in London, mm-hmm. and I worked on an IPO. So everything from, you know, preparing the prospectus, dealing with sort of agreements, negotiating agreements, so while sitting in on the calls while these agreements are negotiated, could be heavily involved in diligence processes. So in an M&A deal, you will always sort of diligence the company that you're buying to know where the sort of risks are and what you need to cater for in your SPA. And that's like something that, yeah, classically a trainee will be very involved in, you know, going into a data room, looking at documents, looking at contracts, figuring out what's going on. But yeah, you can see a number of different deals, and depending on the structure of that deal, sort of private equity or it's like a public deal, it can be quite different.
Thank you. And in any of these seats we've mentioned so far, so litigation, international arbitration, M&A or equity capital markets, is there one case that you worked on that particularly stands out to you or you remember as one of your favorite cases?
I particularly like some of the M&A work that I did. I worked on, yeah, quite an interesting IPO for a lot of my time there, and ended up like really understanding that company and the risks associated with them and their sort of growth prospects, and was very close to the client, and we were sort of always in touch. So I think that was probably stood out, seeing that from beginning to end and sort of celebrations, the M lunch they had listed was great.
Thank you. And you completed your corporate seat at the New York office in the last 6 months of your training contract. Can you speak to the changes in the UK versus the US corporate legal market that you observed?
Yeah, I mean, I was just a trainee at the time, but I think, you know, the agreements are very different. The way you draft SPAs, there are certain different sort of like expectations of how things work. I mean, a lot of the companies and the deals that we're working on, even if, especially in London, will be global and require sort of dealing with processes in multiple different jurisdictions. So I think as a Freshfields lawyer in the UK, you're pretty well prepared to know how to deal with other legal systems and dealing with, you know, different cultural approaches to things.
Thank you. And again, was there a memorable matter you worked on during your New York secondment, and why was it memorable?
So I think, I mean, New York was a great experience. And I think for anyone looking to, you know, like apply for training contracts and things, like a secondment is just a great thing to do, even if it's like a client or if you get to go abroad. And it's something that the US associates here are all like, you manage to sit in all these different seats and, you know, like go to New York, like that's great. I worked on a very private equity deal when I was there and I was very involved in. That actually was California. They were buying a huge sort of agricultural peach and farm in California. So it was great. It was a good team and we all worked very hard. And the client was great. So all around a success.
Thank you. And my final question on your training contract was, what was it about the work you were completing and the cases you were involved in, the antitrust competition and trade seat, that made you want to qualify in this area?
So I always thought antitrust was extremely interesting. And I sat in antitrust actually very early on in my training contract and always thought, you know, this is somewhere that I could come back to. The main reasons I ultimately sort of ended up qualifying here were firstly that, I mean, antitrust is just changing so rapidly at the moment. And it's such an interesting and dynamic area of law that there is really never a dull day. And you can often be doing work that is so different across like a range of different sort of investigations. You can be doing merger control. I've done some sort of regulatory air traffic control appeals that go to the CMA. And so I just thought that as a junior lawyer, I would sort of constantly be challenged. And the team is also great. I mean, Freshfields Antitrust is an amazing team and you sort of learn from the best.
Thank you. That's a great answer. And within your antitrust practice, you have particular expertise navigating the new UK National Security and Investment Act. What does this work revolve around and how do you evaluate this new framework against or in harmony with the US's equivalent act?
See, there's something that I actually find very interesting and it's this kind of variety that is what I love about my job. So yeah, CFIUS has been around for a very long time and is a very established regime. And in the last couple of years around the world, there's been a sort of proliferation of foreign investment regimes catered around whatever different countries are worried about. And the UK brought in their National Security and Investment Act. And I work very closely with one of the partners who is sort of a specialist in this area and really knows, has dealt with a lot of cases under the previous public interest regime. And so I was heavily involved in writing sort of papers to the government, looking at how the act applied in practice when it first applied. And I really enjoyed that process. So we worked very closely with certain clients to think about how this would affect their deals going forward, anything they needed to put in place, and then sort of stayed involved helping on that as sort of the companies dealt with it over the first year of its.
And can you draw any comparisons between the UK National Security and Investment Act and the US's equivalent?
I mean, the thing about these foreign investment acts is very different to sort of a merger control regime, which is normally a lot more clear. So you're driven by national security, which is inherently opaque. Now, the setup of the regimes are different, and there's like very different rules about how these file. But I mean, there's similarities in that there's sort of a voluntary filing mechanism and a mandatory filing mechanism, and you go through a review, and there's the ability to impose sort of remedies at the end. And one similarity is there is an unpredictability associated with many of these reviews. And I mean, we have a very good team in DC actually with a group of lawyers who previously worked within the government, have a real understanding of how sort of CFIUS works, which is an incredible help when advising our clients on sort of the strategies that they might need to sort of get their deal through.
Thank you. And speaking more generally to the regulatory and compliance dominance of the EU, How have you observed the UK and US jurisdictions following suit in areas of antitrust, intellectual property, and technology?
If I think about antitrust, I mean, the EU and the US authorities have always been huge players in relation to sort of antitrust enforcement globally. The CMA, since Brexit, has taken an increasingly aggressive stance, is how many people would probably portray this. Obviously, since Brexit, CMA has had jurisdiction to review sort of many more deals. And we've seen huge global deals derailed just by the CMA. So I think the CMA is really stepping up and is at the table with the sort of other big regulators around the world. The key distinction, if we think about sort of comparing the EU / UK regulatory landscape with the US, the US enforcers, so Jonathan Cantor at the DOJ and Lena Khan at the FTC have been very vocal about sort of bringing forward this quite strong antitrust agenda. But unlike in the EU, where the European Commission is the effectively investigates and makes the decision at the end of the investigation, the FTC and the DOJ have to go to court to block deals. And the sort of backstop of the court system in the US, I think, is probably like a key differentiator between the ultimate outcomes in a number of deals and also potentially in sort of investigations. The EU laws are generally stricter in many ways.
And would you say the highly litigious nature of US antitrust law makes it more exciting for you as a lawyer in this area?
So you definitely need, I think in the UK and in the EU, you need to understand, you need to, you know, sort of be able to appeal your cases if you need to the general court, but the exposure, especially as a junior lawyer, to the litigation side of antitrust is, you just get a lot more exposure here, which I think is great, and it's good to learn. US litigation can be, so it's a whole other beast.
Thank you. So you recently worked on a case involving Amadeus in its successful defense in the European Commission's antitrust investigation into parity clauses. Can you explain what this case was about and what your role was in it?
Yeah, so Amadeus was being investigated for basically anti-competitive agreements. So the European Commission has sort of opened an investigation into them, and we were successful through our advocacy to the EC in, you know, basically effectively getting them to drop the case against us. In the space of this episode, probably we'll have time to explain parity clauses and all the different approach, the sort of MFN laws, etc. But it is definitely an area of interest to the Commission, and there's been, you know, guidance published on how parity clauses can be sort of anti-competitive or not. But it's also that one really interesting thing about the Amadeus case is that Sabre, who is the other sort of large competitor to Amadeus, was also looking to acquire Farelogix. So at the same time of this investigation going on. And so it was a real example of how there's an importance in understanding sort of a much broader picture than just an isolated investigation, and seeing how sort of other elements of the legal landscape can impact your case with, you know, findings on market definition or findings on sort of how competition works in those markets.
Thank you, Megan. And interestingly, you also worked on Tesco's successful $10 billion disposal of its Thai and Malaysian businesses. What cross-jurisdictional work was involved in this case?
Yeah, so this is a really interesting deal, actually. We helped coordinate with local council in Thailand predominantly, because that's where there were the most competition concerns, to get the deal through. And the buyer was a large sort of Thai company. And I think this is where being at like a global firm and really being able to add value, but also understand the sort of cultural implications and navigating sort of different regulators that may not, you know, very different to sort of the CMA was, yeah, it was a real challenge, but was really, really fulfilling in the end.
Thank you. And lastly, I want to discuss an article you co-wrote earlier this year titled Federal Antitrust Enforcement Will Gain Steam and Delay Mergers. Can you explain your motivations for writing this article?
Yeah, so this is sort of something I touched on earlier, which was the kind of changes in the enforcement landscape in the US in the last couple of years with sort of Lina Khan at the FTC and Jonathan Cantor at the DOJ. I think it's an interesting time and companies need to be thinking very closely at how they navigate this kind of new landscape and get their deals through. So it's just something that we know that our clients will be interested in, and me and a couple of partners, we decided to write this article.
And can you summarize the findings of this article?
Yeah, so the article in short is what I've just said. It's talking about the sort of boundaries that are being pushed in antitrust enforcement. So kind of the key conclusion said that there's novel theories of harm. So rather than your traditional sort of horizontal concerns, looking at vertical links in mergers, labor concerns are also being assessed in sort of merger control, like the impact that a deal could have on labor markets. And all of these are sort of new and novel theories, which lead to sort of greater scrutiny, longer timelines, and there's also one other point that we touched on in the article is the ability to sort of fix it first. So this idea, again, of fixing your deal, fixing the competition concerns, and then litigating that fix or sort of using that fix to get your deal through. And the last sort of point we made in the article is very much something we've touched on throughout this interview, which is the need for that international perspective. Your deal is blocked if one regulator blocks it. So you can't have a narrow-minded focus on just one jurisdiction.
Thank you. And what in your opinion is the lawyer's role in bridging apparent gaps between the government's and the law's treatment of matters so central to business, including antitrust?
I think as a lawyer, your role is really to just, you know, you're there to support and guide your client through the legal landscape. And it depends slightly if you're in sort of an antitrust litigation investigation phase or a merger where you're often working more collaboratively with the government agencies at the beginning to potentially negotiate remedies or even just put forward the sort of pro-competitive rationale and story for your deal. So the lawyer really has that in-depth understanding, has that knowledge of the strategy and can help implement that strategy sort of across the world.
Thank you. And my very last question, ending on another comparative reflection between your US and UK expertise, can you summarize the reasons why one who is UK educated and qualified should look to relocating to the US at some point in the future? Speaking to your ability to expand your expertise and perhaps witness more prudently your contributions to the world of commercial law.
The first thing I'll say is, I mean, you have to really want to do it because you will obviously have to retrain. And I had to take the bar to be able to move over here. And there are many sort of skills from being a lawyer in London and knowledge that I was able to bring across, especially when advising on sort of international deals. But you also have to very much learn again how to be a proper US lawyer. And so there's like many reasons I chose to move to the US. One was just the exciting prospect of building a new office and growing a practice, which I think is very specific to the sort of circumstances that I was in. Also, just on a personal level, I now live in California and it's lovely. and the clients are great out here, which is another reason that I was really, really keen to come out. And I think it's a great experience and for me personally, and I think you do have to be really committed to that switch, because especially in sort of certain areas where you are building up quite like detailed expertise and knowledge. But yeah, the US is such an exciting legal market that it's great to be out here.
Definitely. Thank you so much for your insights today, Megan. We have covered many topics, and I think our listeners will find particularly useful the comparative lens with which you've described your experiences in both US and UK antitrust matters. So thank you so much.
Not at all. And I'm sure, Sophia, we'll leave some links in the sort of show notes for our trainee program and our VAC schemes. And I'm sure, yeah, it'd be great to have some of the listeners join one day.
Yes, thank you.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning into this episode of On the Case, the LSC Law Society's podcast. Further information and our contact details can be found in the description of this episode. Don't forget to follow us at LSCSU Law Soc on Instagram or on LinkedIn at LSC's On the Case. See you next time.